So welcome to the June 24, 2020 9/11 Another D-State Crime Teleconference Call. Craig, do you want to take the role?
Sure, sure. I'll just read who I have. First of all, I have Ann Hendricks, Kat McGuire, Sherry, Aspen, Cheryl Curtis, Craig McKee, Fern Tishman, Frank Tlopko, Helen, is it Byniski? Am I getting the pronunciation correct there? Yeah. Jessica Coco, John O'Malley, Lynn Cornelson, sorry, Lynn, Marty Hopper, and Peter Ketchum. So that's who we've got so far.
Great. Do we miss anybody? Oh, and Gregory Longo, who's here with me on the phone. Okay. So we don't have any minutes to approve, and now we're behind, but we're looking for a secretary. If anyone wants to volunteer again, I'll put that out there. We could use someone who would help us with the minutes. Okay, so just let us know if anyone's interested in that. And we're kind of desperate, so any help would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's jump right in then to approving the agenda. Are there any objections to the agenda as it went out? Okay, hearing none, then they're consider them approved. And let's start in with our program. Our first speaker tonight and our only speaker tonight is Helen Byniski. And Helen is a journalist, a photographer based in New York City. Her work has appeared on RT, Global Research, Eon Journal, Progressive Radio Network, and Veterans Today. She has a BA in journalism from the New School University and also studied at Columbia University and New York University. And Helen, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us about the coronavirus and police state control.
All right, so the article in question, though, the one that I guess inspired you to have me on here today, was about the lockstep scenario, which is dates back to 2010. The Rockefeller Foundation and the Global Business Network had this scenario put together as part of a group of four scenarios that were set out as basically what the world could look to in the future. And this lockstep in particular, this first scenario, set up I'm getting some weird interference.
I'm
going to
put Now I got to unmute. Craig, can you find Helen and unmute her? Let's see.
Lockstep is basically this Rockefeller Foundation scenario written in 2010 that somehow just happens to exactly predict the future of 2020 because we are experiencing this exact thing today. And so Lockstep sets out in very disturbing detail a world in which a pandemic has been unleashed. It's come, in this case, they say it's come from Central America, South America, but obviously the real version is from China. At any rate, China locks down, the whole world follows, and it's a cascade of things that have happened in the real world in exact sequence in that, the Western world, which normally had this weird affection for freedom, has actually followed China's lead because, you know, they quelled the pandemic really quick, and so they installed all these police state measures like temperature checks and quarantines and lockdowns and all of this. And everybody lived happily ever after until, you know, the citizens started becoming risky and more police state measures were required, and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it describes a lot of what we're going through now. And the way that it does so is there's just a sequence of events, and the specificity of events is such that it seems like they had foreknowledge. And there's more indications they had foreknowledge. It seems that this coronavirus thing is a U.S./Israeli bioweapon that was unleashed initially on China and spread to other parts of the world. I mean, Iran got hit hard very early. Italy got hit hard because Italy was making too nice with China, and they didn't want that. So they had to be taught a lesson. But it seems that the coronavirus definitely came out of the lab, but it wasn't as many of the media operations that were pumping out this info on behalf of Israel have been saying, a Chinese lab. It was a U.S. lab, likely Fort Detrick, which was shut down mysteriously in August for leaks and failures of security. But Yeah, this Rockefeller lockstep scenario is pretty much the predecessor of Event 201, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with, but on the off chance that you aren't, was a collaboration between the Bill Gates Gates Foundation and the Johns Hopkins University World Economic Forum, all of these sort of ruling class groups to sort of set out what would happen if a mysterious coronavirus pandemic was unleashed upon the world. And of course, they don't really talk about what would happen in terms of health. It's more of what would happen in terms of like economics and how would governments particularly control people, eliminate internet shutdowns, power failures, things like that. And we're seeing all of this play out in real life, both the, in terms of the lockstep scenario and in terms of the Event 201 in real life. And so it's very difficult to avoid the idea that this was pre-planned. I mean, they try to claim that it came out of a wet market, but that scenario has been disproven in all kinds of ways. Like early Chinese studies showed that the earliest exposures to, or the earliest people infected with the virus, rather, had no exposure to the wet market. So Western media continue to pump out this thing, and they also kind of feast on this idea of, oh, the Chinese, they don't know how to handle their viruses, so they must have done it, because it's, I don't know, I hesitate to use the word racism, because it's been so belabored in the last few weeks in to describe pretty much everything. I mean, yes, there is a definite problem with racism in American police forces, but this term has now become just overused word and is not it is, however, relevant in terms of the American regard for Chinese ability to control their bioweapons, because it wasn't China that got their lab shut down for overlooking security procedures. It was the U.S., which somehow couldn't control their wastewater situation in this Fort Detrick top-level BSL-4 lab. And then, whoops, all of these old folks' homes, what's the politically correct term for those? I don't remember, but elder care facilities, I guess, were turning up with these mysterious respiratory illnesses. And they had to explain those away by saying, oh, well, some weird strain of pneumonia, and et cetera, et cetera. And then fast forward to, April of this year, and then you've got Cuomo trying to pretend he didn't make orders to send in coronavirus patients to old folks' homes. And it's disturbing, because it checks all the boxes in what they wanted to get away with as far as complete, total technological surveillance. You can read the World Economic Forum sends out a weekly newsletter that basically talks about how they're getting everything they wanted. They're calling it the Great Reset, which, I'm sorry, when the World Economic Forum starts talking about the Great Reset, anybody who's making under 8 figures a year needs to start, getting a little worried, because they're part of the culling, and this is very definitely a culling. Not only the nursing home orders that I just mentioned, but in general, there's going to be a massive attempt to just evict people, make people's lives very difficult, debase people, force them into such a desperate state that they're willing to accept anything that will get them out of there, even if it's the most draconian police state they've ever encountered in their lives. And that's exactly what they have prepared. So, I mean, in New York, where we're told we're the epicenter of the world pandemic right now, they're rolling out this contact tracing program, which anybody who knows anything about pandemic management, even people who don't, I mean, it's not like I've studied this at all, but the idea of rolling out a contact tracing program when the pandemic has been loose in your city for, 4 months now? Okay, so you're going to start contact tracing now. Yeah, that'll really do a great job. No, that's idiotic. And the idea that this has anything to do with tracing a pandemic is, that doesn't make any sense. Especially when, as is the case in New York, they're forbidden from asking questions about any possible protests that people might have attended. Protests were, for many people in New York and for many other cities, the first interaction with large numbers of other human beings that people have had, because they were told that coming outside of their houses was killing grandma. And so the first time they were given official, like, a media-sanctioned ability to come out of their house and talk to other people or interact with the people or express their political rage, I mean, yes, as I said, racism and police brutality are a massive issue in the U.S. I'm not denying that. But a lot of this is fueled by economic rage. A lot of this is fueled by people having been unjustifiably deprived of their jobs and deprived of their ability to earn a living for their family. And nobody likes being consigned by their government to poverty, especially when it's couched in this very transparent, very hollow guise of, oh, it's for your own good, when even Cuomo himself, Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York State, the guy who literally did kill Grandma, said that, oh, well, yeah, just 66% of the cases, the new cases, came from people who stayed at home and minded their own business and followed orders. So, okay, so you're admitting that your orders are completely useless. But at any rate, back to the U.S.-Israeli bioweapon situation. You've got this guy, Danny Shoham, who is an Israeli bio-research analyst, a.k.a. bioweapons specialist, talking about how, yeah, the Chinese can't handle their bioweapons, and so it was definitely them. And this is the same guy who said back in 2001 that the anthrax that was mailed out to a few U.S. congressmen who were against the Patriot Act was the fault of Saddam Hussein, who just had a bunch of anthrax lying around because he was just that good. And it just happened to be the same kind of anthrax that they have in FBI labs in the U.S. So, I mean, the fact that this guy is still given any credit is a large journalistic oversight from the people who wrote about him with any sort of credibility. But in general, the cult aspect to the coronavirus, the fact that the wearing of the masks has become sort of a way for people who have fallen for the narrative to recognize each other and to point and hiss at heretics in the manner that we see in Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I mean, they don't go into that in great detail in lockstep or in either of the scenarios, but it really is key to how they're able to pull this off, because they get to do this groupthink. The people who have been crushed probably most under the boot of the ruling class are given that little bit of authority that they so desperately crave, and they might not be good at anything that pays, but they're good at rule following, and so they're given jobs as contact tracers, or they just, you know, they out people who are not wearing masks on social media, and that itself constitutes an accomplishment, and they're patted on the back for that. And as I said about the Agenda 2030, they're trying to get rid of cash. They a couple of countries have pushed rather far in service to this digital only or just getting rid of cash, credit cards only, a trackable currency. And even MIT, which is not exactly a dissident group, has kind of had to admit that this idea that cash transmits disease is not exactly legitimate, especially when you've got, like, keypads that you have to press on, you know, transmit disease that way. So it's not legitimate, and they've just been pushing it so hard and coming from every angle. The problem is that most people don't have the time to take to do the research. Most people don't want to rock the boat, and most people think that, oh, well, you know, I can concede in this one way, live to fight another day, and go and push on this direction, only to find that that direction is blocked too. I mean, now we're finding that our phones are downloading these coronavirus tracking apps, even when we don't acknowledge that. So, I mean, it's the problem is that the lockdown, the lockstep rather scenario, talks about the popular rebellion like it's a 10-year thing. Like, oh, they only started to rebel 10 years after the situation took place, but I mean, if we don't have 10 years, if we don't start rebelling now, then we don't have a future to look forward to, because what they're trying to do is, I mean, Microsoft has actually gotten a patent for a situation where you, I mean, Elon Musk has the Neuralink, but the brain implants and various invasive devices in which they're measuring your vitals. Apple Watch is now measuring you washing your hands. A lot of devices are measuring a lot more about you than you might think. Anything that touches your body, for example, be very aware of that. But these devices are measuring your vital signs and measuring your temperature and all of this. And Microsoft got a patent for this thing that will measure your ability to watch an advertisement, and it will give you cryptocurrency in response to you having verifiably watched that advertisement. Okay, so, I mean, this sounds like the first step towards the human batteries we see in the Matrix. I don't want to be alarmist or anything, but, I mean, it does seem like a tiptoe down the road toward a very, very disturbing situation. Now, I'm not saying that's where it's going to end up, but I am saying that, okay, so you're going to be rewarded for watching an ad, and if you decide not to watch the ad, you're not rewarded. What if you have the wrong response to an ad? What if your response to the ad is one of disgust rather than one of delight? Are you not going to get the reward? As they remove cash from circulation, this is going to become more and more important, and I don't know if they're going to not be able to enforce this neural implant stuff, but there is this definite, even the World Economic Forum acknowledges that this is the largest psychological experiment ever conducted ever on humanity. There is this little thing called the Nuremberg Code that forbids experimentation without permission. So I don't really know how the people running the show are getting away with this, but the problem is that the people who are being experimented on just won't stand up. They've got too much else to deal with. They're trying to put food on the table. They're trying to keep their family safe. They're trying to fit in because, I mean, conformity is very important for a lot of us. And, I mean, blame the media, blame education, blame whatever for that. But it's a very disturbing situation because I don't see how, without a lot of people waking up within a very short period of time, we're going to get out of this lockstep situation because, I don't know, as the 5G is being rolled out very quickly, while everybody is indoors and can't see people installing stations everywhere, and there's nothing that us in the U.S. can do because we have this Clinton-era regulation that prevents us from actually taking control of our environment and preventing things from being installed. And the idea is basically to complete the process of self-alienation. I've spoken about this in another presentation, but basically, you alienate the person from the land, from the society, from the species, from the family, from friends, from, and now I'm reading about on Twitter all these people talking about how, oh, well, I don't talk to my, like, I had to break up with my boyfriend because, like, he didn't believe in the masks and everything, and, okay, so you're, like, literally breaking up relationships because some people don't want to be pod people and some people do. That's great. No, I can't really get behind it, but I'm sorry, what does that beep mean?
Someone joined the pod.
Okay. Yeah, no, and the idea of pathologizing dissent is another big problem. We've seen this in Germany and Switzerland where two very professional people, I think the one was a medical lawyer and the other one was, I believe, a psychiatrist in Switzerland, though don't quote me on that, I don't remember. People were both taken away and imprisoned, at least for a brief period of time, for going against the whole lockdown thing. And one was a medical lawyer who is very familiar with how civil law works in Germany. And Beate Bonner is her name. And this idea that also in the UK they've made it so that if they want to section you, which is means declare you insane and have you put in a mental institution, they can do it with only one person, which is used to require two people and at least cut back on some abuses. But yeah, they're trying to basically declare any opposition to the medical martial law, which is what we're dealing with right now, which is what I mean, not only lockstep, but certainly Event 201 predicted, and certainly the Medical Health Emergency State Preparedness Act. I always get the letters mixed up with that, but it's like MHESPA. The state acts in the U.S. that were passed in the aftermath of the anthrax attacks, because of the anthrax attacks, sort of like the Patriot Act, but like in a miniature form. These acts that gave unprecedented authority to like two-bit medical authorities to do the job of the police, and the police to do the job of the medical authorities. So these basically got unprecedented powers. We're going to be able to go into your house, take your stuff, do with it what they would, and inject you with whatever they like. And a lot of states now are passing laws that say, oh, well, whatever coronavirus vaccine comes along, well, we're going to just have to give that to you, and we don't really care how toxic it is, because why would our government do anything bad to us? it's a thorough delusion, and they've been setting up this vaccine thing for several years, smearing anybody who doesn't fully accept any vaccine that comes down the pipe, no matter how untested, unsafe, even if the guy who developed it has already one hideously unsafe vaccine under his belt. I mean, ask anybody in the UK about what happened with the swine flu vaccine in 2009. That's the guy who is in charge of Operation Warp Speed. So, I mean, you're not allowed to ask these questions because they just will smear you as anti-vaxxer, which is basically like saying, I don't know, saying you killed Jesus, or you stomped on a kitten, or you did something horrible, whatever it is. It's not good. And problem is that this groupthink that is tightening its grip on the throat of the American people, on the throat of the British people, the throat of most countries, actually, in Western civilization, is preventing any dissenting views from getting out there. And this idea of internet shutdowns and power shutdowns, even worse, I mean, I don't know, like, it's, unless you have a very tight network of people on the ground who can get information out in like a samizdat kind of form, I don't know what the solution is, because without the internet, we don't have a whole lot as far as communications. It's very difficult, if they've made that deliberately so, to meet people and talk about this stuff under lockdown. So I don't know, I guess that's something I would like to hear ideas about, and that's about it for my presentation, I think.
All right. Well, thank you, Helen. Thanks a lot. We're going to go into Q&A mode so people can ask you questions. Let me just change that now. If anyone would like to ask Helen a question or have a comment, it's star 6, as you know. And while we're waiting for people to get in the queue, Helen, I wanted to ask you, I think it feels to me like we're in a sort of a bind with that there is sort of this virus out there. I mean, from all, you know, at least in the nursing homes, and I think they're faking a lot of the numbers, or, you know, but there's like false positives and they're raising the numbers. But also it is there, and there are a lot of people who fear getting it and or know somebody who's had it. So how do we balance, like, you know, trying to keep people protected from the virus if they're really frightened by that, but also protecting ourselves from the police state? I feel like we're sort of in a bind there. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. Oops, I think I might have muted you. Just hang on a second. Okay,
there's definitely a virus going around. I have no reason to deny that. I know people who have gotten very sick with it. I would say the solution is to boost up your immune system. Make sure you get outside. Make sure you interact with other people. I mean, your immune system relies on vitamin D, which you get from the sun. I mean, unless you're taking supplements, and even then, it's best to just get it from the sun. I mean, that's where it usually comes from in human beings. Interacting with human beings, they've kept us inside for a reason. It's because it weakens your immune system, and so that they could, when they started reopening the states, start talking about, oh, look, the cases are going up, and oh, look at that, well, we should have kept lockdown longer. And no, this was deliberate, and they knew that this was going to happen because people's immune systems would have been weakened from prolonged lockdown. But yes, you can interact with people in a limited way. I would say that taking vitamin C, taking zinc, echinacea, there are all kinds of supplements that you can take to boost your immune system, but vitamin D in huge quantities is a good idea. There are the scientific studies that say this. Vitamin C is always a good thing. Zinc, I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do. Eat healthy, even. Like, that's a very basic idea, but one that many Americans simply ignore because they like to consume fried food. But, just eating healthy will help you in at least a way. I think that people should not ignore the specter of the virus, especially if they have or if they themselves are elderly or have other sicknesses. It's not a reason to hide out in your house for prolonged periods of time, which is what they want us to do.
Okay, thank you. All right, we have a couple questions here. The first one is from Sherry Aspen. Sherry, go ahead. Sherry, are you there?
I had to unmute. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I had to be muted. Thank you very much for coming on our call. It's so nice to be on this call to talk to people that know what's going on. To me, it's like therapy. What are the chances, do you think, that this virus was engineered to affect dark pigmented skin? Because it seems to be affecting darker colored skin more, such as the Navajo Nation is riddled with it. And do you think that they could keep releasing the virus at various locations throughout time, and there could be possibly different strains of this being released at different places, such as why in Iran that, you know, the Iranian officials got nailed right away. And what do you think we can do as the people that are woken up? I mean, what kind of plan do you think that we should have, like a place we should all go, or being, you know, something, stock up on food, I guess, for sure. I mean, but what if they come for us to do this vaccine, or you can't buy food, and what do you think we should do? Thank you. I'll mute.
Oh, man, I wish I had an answer for the second part of your question. But, yeah, as far as the first goes, like I said, vitamin D has been proven to be a part of, like, the ability to survive this virus. And because people with darker skin have less of an ability to absorb vitamin D from the sun, yes, that is part of why they are worse affected. There's also the situation, at least in large cities, that we're seeing in terms of, like, less wealthy people have got poorer quality health care, therefore they tend to survive less. I mean, if you're making under six figures and you end up in a hospital, they just jam a ventilator down your throat, collect their $36,000 from the government, and go on their merry way, in which case you probably end up dead. But, yeah, there's also the situation of the vitamin D absorption. Yeah, people with darker skin will not absorb as much vitamin D. I would say take vitamin D supplements. That's the best solution that I can come up with. And as far as what we do in response to it, that is, I mean, if you know people who have intentional communities or who are building intentional communities, I would say get out of countries where you know that they've got these orders to put coronavirus patients in nursing homes, places like New York. I mean, I'm in New York. I'm working on getting out of New York because I don't want to be in a state that is run by a sociopathic killer, which Andrew Cuomo most definitely is. So, I mean, I would say that people should start working on forming these intentional communities in other states. And I was interested initially in moving to another country, but the problem is that America, alas, has ruined its reputation around the world by consistently bombing all these innocent countries around the world. And so I don't think that Americans are necessarily going to be treated the best. I mean, most American citizens, of course, are innocent of this, but the problem is our government has worn out our welcome all over the world, and it's going to make things difficult for those of us who are trying to flee the country and become embraced by other governments. I don't know if that's necessarily going to work, but I think that there is the possibility of making intentional communities in rural areas or less populated areas, at least those governed by people who aren't Cuomo or Gavin Newsom in California or Inslee in Washington. I mean, there are a few governors who have distinguished themselves by their sheer, like, scumbaggery. I would say avoiding the states of those people is a good idea, but in general, the both coasts seem to be the toxic places right now, and it's unfortunate because that's the only place I've ever lived is on the coast, so I don't know. I'm looking for an answer to that question too. But as far as the skin color thing, I would say that's largely vitamin D related, and you can supplement. Vitamin D is a healthy thing to take in large quantities. Get out in the sun as much as you can. That's generally a good way. There are multiple scientific studies that show that coronavirus is inversely severe to amount of vitamin D that you have in your system.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Sherry. Next with a question, we have Lynn Cornelison. Lynn, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Lynn from Iowa. How did you think this started? I haven't seen too many studies on it as far as like spot spraying. I'm here in Southwest Iowa. I really haven't seen any real ones around here, but this is not one of the areas where they're really, and I'm thankful for that. But how do you think that started out? Do you think it was rolled out in certain areas and then kept up there, or just how did that get delivered?
Well, I think that it initially was brought out, I think, as I said before, in Wuhan, as far as these military games, this delegation of 300 American military, supposedly soldiers, went over there and participated in this military games that took place in Wuhan, and then all of a sudden everybody had it all at once. But there is definitely evidence that it was in America before then, and I would say that, yeah, it was definitely brought to different places at different times. It seems to be that there was this AIPAC delegation in Washington, D.C., that this Israeli lobbying group that ended up sending it up to New York, which became, of course, the hot spot of the world. And as far as a place like Idaho, I would say that probably, if anything, arose organically, because there hasn't, at least as far as I know, there hasn't been a huge hot spot in Idaho. But I do know that they've tried to demonize governors who haven't put in place heavy lockdowns, like the governor of, I think it's South Dakota, the woman there, Christy Noem. I think she's South Dakota. She didn't lock down the whole place, and so they were posting every article they wrote about South Dakota would have a picture of her looking like crazy. They would find some picture where she had like crazy eyes and try to make her seem like this reckless individual when they had like single-digit deaths at the time. And there were many states in the U.S. that didn't require lockdowns and yet instituted them anyway. So I think that they've been definitely trying to selectively punish some places that didn't comply as much as they'd like. I would have to look at the Idaho numbers to know to what degree that would have been planted. But I think a lot of it is organic travel. I mean, people who they bring some super spreader into one place or another, a lot of these people don't even know they're sick, because a lot of the younger coronavirus positive patients don't know they have the virus, because it's not this killer condition that they're saying it is. So I don't really know the answer to that one. But in general, yeah, they definitely bring it to certain places that they want it to spread in. And yes, I think I didn't quite get around to answering the question before that. There are different strains. Iran got a much worse strain than, say, California.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Lynn. And then we have another question here from Jessica Coco. Jessica, go ahead.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to add something. First, there's not just coronavirus going out around, but also the barium flu. So there's been areas that they've been spraying very heavily, and people are actually dying of the barium flu. And according to my pulmonologist, they know how to treat COVID, and they've always known how to treat COVID, because asthma patients don't get COVID, because they're on steroids or they're on medications like Fasenra, which stops cytokine reactions. So I just wanted to bring that up. But the thing I wanted to bring up, Helen, is that you're also in New York City, and here in New York City, we've been trying to get the message out here in Union Square, so maybe we can exchange numbers or something and maybe work together on something.
And get the message out about what? About this coronavirus thing or something else?
I'm sorry, what was that?
You said get the message out. Get which message out? The message.
Yeah.
Out
so yes. Every Saturday we're here at Union Square at 12 noon, and we have a speak out.
But and what topic are you speaking out about? Sorry.
About the lockdown and the RFID chip and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very important. And the fact that more New Yorkers are not speaking out about that, I find to be a huge failing of this city. I mean, I don't know if in your neighborhood you've noticed the fireworks. I mean, I hate to bring this off topic, but I think that this is very important, because I'm hearing that it's happening in other cities too, is that we're experiencing fireworks that are above and beyond any other level of fireworks that people have experienced in previous years. I mean, I've lived in New York for 15, going on 16 years, which is, of course, not my entire life, so there's the possibility that it was like this beforehand, but I know other people who have been lived here for much longer who are also saying that this sounds like that, like Fallujah or Raqqa or something out there. It sounds like we're under bombardment by a foreign army and every night for the last month. And the idea that this is just normal 4th of July fireworks is ridiculous. What I believe they are trying to do is do some kind of massive insurance job, set the place on fire, because nobody will go into office buildings anymore. They're supposedly hives of coronavirus. Everybody's working from home. They people who own the office buildings, they know that the real estate bubble has collapsed. They're not going to get their money back. A lot of people who live in these high-rise buildings are not going to get their money back. They would just as soon see the place burn, and all the rich people have left. So it's those of us who have not got anywhere else to go to who are going to be left holding the burning bag. And I would say that, I mean, de Blasio has supposedly announced a fireworks task force the other day after people massed outside his home and started honking their horns. A long overdue protest, I would say. But it's anybody's guess. I mean, I even joked at the time, as soon as I heard that announcement, oh, they're going to pull over some brown kids in an SUV full of fireworks they just picked up from the NYPD. They pulled over two Hispanic dudes in Staten Island with $6,000 worth of fireworks in their trunk. You know, usually when I make a joke and it comes true, it takes more than 24 hours. It's a sickening feeling. But at any rate, I think that New Yorkers need to get involved, start calling their local government, calling their councilman, calling their, senator. I mean, I don't know if you can hear this fireworks going off right now, although they're normal fireworks. We know fireworks are a normal thing in New York, but the ones that sound like bombs, those aren't normal.
Okay. Thank you, Jessica. Next, we have a question from Kat McGuire. Kat, go ahead.
Hey, hi. Before I ask Helen my question, I just want to say my little theory on top of Helen's, because that's just such an astute insight that she and Harry Box had about the fires, at least for New York City, is that for the past 2 months or so, all these super big, not high-rise per se, but the office buildings have been completely empty. And perfect if you want to do a controlled demolition on all of them because nobody's going in there. And so they set fires, and under the cover of all of these fires, then they can just easily do the controlled demolition. And all these nobody wants these office buildings anymore. Everything is going remote at the corporate level, almost everything. And so what are all these rich people going to do with all these offices, as Helen and Vox said in their video? Jewish lightning, so it's like Lucky Larry on steroids here, so that's a possibility. But the other thing that my question for Helen is, Helen, what do you, what's your feel about the food shortages and food famines, not just here in the U.S., but like globally? Is Africa going to have biblical level famines and we just have shortages and a super high crisis? Food, what's your take?
Oh, yeah, they're definitely going to use this to, like I said, to get everything on their wish list is going to get checked off. I mean, you got somebody like Bill Gates who desperately wants to depopulate Africa, talking about how, oh, it's going to be terrible. The coronavirus is really going to decimate Africa, when, like, African countries have largely been skeptical of the coronavirus narrative. I mean, you had the guy in the president of Tanzania, I believe, who sent the pineapple and the goat's head and the piece of a car, I think, to the WHO lab for testing for corona, and of course they came back positive because that's what happens when you're making stuff up. But yeah, the Africa doesn't seem to be hit too hard with the coronavirus because they've got more important things on their hands, like trying to survive. And so Bill Gates definitely has predicted the future in that way that he has a tendency to do, in a way that's not exactly predicting and just, you know, letting slip what they have planned. And, yeah, they've got all these plagues of locusts going on, which I don't know if you guys know about that, but Pakistan is dealing with that. A lot of countries in Africa are dealing with that. And it's full on. Basically everything that can go wrong is going wrong. And I don't know. I'm not a big coincidence theorist, but I know some people are, and those people are saying, oh, well, you know, it just happens to be that the terrible misfortune this year must I don't know what their explanation is, but it's definitely giving the ruling class everything they want in terms of depopulating the third world, leaving all that nice resources there for the taking. It's not going to be pretty. And so I would advise that any African country that has the muscle to do so, take it to the UN, take it to whatever, International Criminal Court, because they know. I mean, the president of Burundi just mysteriously die after taking the WHO out of his country? Like, I would say those people need to take it to the ICC or take it to the UN, because otherwise they're going to get squashed.
Okay. All set, Kat?
Yeah. Is anyone else queued up? Because I do have another.
We have one more person. Okay. Great. Something happened with the Q&A here. What's going on? Okay. Anne Hendricks, you're going to be next, but I have to unmute you.
This is Anne, but Kat, why don't you go? Can you go back to Kat? Because she had some more.
Yeah, let me just see. Something screwed up with the Q&A. Let's just see. Okay, Kat, you're unmuted if you want to finish what you were saying. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, I was just going to say if there were no other questions, I have a question, but I put myself in the queue so that other person can go ahead and go ahead.
Okay. Anne, are you okay?
That's fine.
Okay.
I just wanted to make some comments and a couple questions for you, Helen, and I did read your article. Very excellent. Thank you so much for all your reporting. Just some questions real quick here. Did you ever seek to interview any of the people who authored the document, the Rockefeller Foundation report, like Judith Rodin or Peter Schwartz or Andrew Blau, those individuals? Did you ever seek to trace who were the actual authors of these documents and what they're up to today?
I did not, and I probably should have. I mean, I always assume these people make themselves difficult to be contacted, and in my experience, they generally have that level of person, but I did not specifically make an attempt to contact these people. And now that you mention it, I will do so. So thanks for suggesting that.
Sure. I have another suggestion about, let's see, who would we really become friends with, you know? And right now, I think that we have a natural alliance kind of developing with police officers. A lot of police police are leaving the force, you know, standing down, and I think that they might become potential truth seekers. So anyway, just want to mention that. Now I have another question for you. Social distancing. Some people like Joe Imbriano, who has the Fullerton Informer out in, Fullerton, California, he believes that social distancing is in regard to the Wi-Fi weaponry. He's warning about that a lot. He thinks that the next wave, so to speak, might be coming from the 5G or Wi-Fi weaponry, and that he says that it's an attack on oxygen, that that it's a beam forming millimeter waves that can be directed at, like, students in school now that if they're returning, or wherever you are, you know, wherever you're working, that type of thing. Are you familiar with him or with that idea that might be the real reason for social distancing, so we can be more easily attacked, and that's to take away our own breath?
I'm familiar with that idea. I'm not, I don't really trust him further that I can throw him. However, the idea is not his own. I mean, that's an idea I've heard from a lot of, like, ex-military and people who say that they're told to stand, like, this much apart so that whatever the wireless or whatever command things can beam towards them and whatnot. I mean, that's not his sole idea, although I don't know, maybe the attack on oxygen thing is. I'm not really familiar with that. I don't typically watch Joe Imbriano because I don't find him to be particularly credible. But, yeah, the idea of people being 6 feet apart so that they can be targeted with whatever wireless 5G whatever they've got in there. I mean, I don't even know the details of what the... Oh, my God, my cat is attempting to broadcast. I'm sorry. Whatever sort of weapons they've got hooked up. I don't know what the most advanced stuff is, but I've heard from ex-military that they've got ways to communicate to troops unless they tell them to stay on 6 feet apart and et cetera. So that definitely sounds legitimate. As far as alliance with cops, with ex-cops, yes. With ex-cops, yes. With current cops, I don't know. The best thing you can do is leaflet them and hope that if they decide to leave the force because they realize they're being thrown under the bus by the ruling class, they might decide to look up that flyer they got a few weeks ago. But, I mean, unfortunately, the cops are as much subject to groupthink as the rest of the pod people. And, yes, but the ex-cops, those are definitely the people we want on our side because they realize what's happened. They know that they've been used as enforcers of rules that do not benefit them. And the fact is that they will be able to communicate with their former colleagues in a way that we cannot. And that's very important. So, yes, that's a good idea.
Okay. Just
okay,
a couple other comments.
Go ahead.
For agricultural reports, what you were talking about, well, worldwide, I think Kat might have mentioned that, food shortages, that kind of thing. Ice Age Farmer is a good YouTube channel for agricultural issues around the world. And also in regard to fireworks, I live in a rural area, just a very, very rural, and there are a lot of fireworks happening right here in my neighborhood, and I thought that it could be something more dangerous, like that, I mean, kids, you know, that it might cause a fire here. But I think just the sound of them could be like, to, you know, causing more unrest and agitation, too. But anyway, that's enough comments for me. Thank you so much. I appreciate all your work, Helen.
Thanks, Dan. Kat, you're back up. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Helen, could you make a bridge between Corona and all this race stuff? I mean, it happened boom, boom, one right after the other. Obviously, there's the whole stupid lockdown things, lockdowns for thee but not for me. But at a higher level, how do you connect the puppeteers between one and the other, and can one?
Yeah, it's a strategy of tension thing. I mean, they want to turn people against each other. The same people who are out in the streets demonstrating against police brutality and racism, which, I mean, said again and again, are legitimate issues, were condemning the anti-lockdown protesters a month and a half ago. So this idea that we must be against each other because the divide and conquer again and again and again, always. Strategy of tension, divide and conquer. When in doubt, one of those two phrases describes whatever psyop is going on at any given moment. And that's, in this particular case, it's both. So, there's definitely a situation in which the people who were protesting lockdowns are now, oh, well, how come they get to protest and be okay with, government is okay with that, when, in fact, we should be making common cause because nobody likes police brutality. Nobody likes having their freedoms taken away, even though they're told for some reason that they do. I mean, there are a few people on the left who have completely fallen to this whole pod people, yes, lockdown is great thing. But I think there's fewer than were told, and a lot of them are afraid to speak up. But if the two groups ever made common cause and rose up against the ruling class, they'd be very much out of luck because there's a lot more of us than there are of them. And that would be my bridge between the two, is that we're all not the ruling class, and we're varying levels of not the ruling class, and the ruling class wants to make very sure that the people on one rung of the ladder are focused on the people one rung above them on the ladder, and they don't take any care to the people at the top of the ladder. They're pulling down statues in symbolism of oppression that took place hundreds of years ago, and not paying any attention to the oppression that's going on right now, the oppression, the boot that is literally on their throat right now. They don't even notice that boot because they're so used to it. They don't even realize it exists. I mean, some person, I don't know if it was the spokesman for the Fed or somebody involved in the Federal Reserve said the other day that, oh, yeah, the Fed policy doesn't have anything to do with prolonging inequality or something like that. And I responded to it with a tweet about, oh, yeah, Fish says there's no such thing as water or something like that. It was the idea that somebody who's been mired in something their entire life is not going to recognize it, care about it, care about how it affects other people, that idea. And the fact is that the people who are stomping on all of us, they don't care about what we're going through. They get some enjoyment out of pitting us against each other, and that's the problem is that we so willfully go for going against each other. People just love to tear each other's throats out when we're tearing the wrong throats out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Next we have Fern Tishman. Fern, go ahead.
Hi. Well, I didn't know there was an outreach at 12 o'clock on Saturdays. That's not a good time for me, but I am looking to have a voice. My name is Fern Tishman, and I write every day about 9/11, and there's a lot of similarities between the way that our officials use 9/11 to order, to create wars and tell the people all these lies in the same way with coronavirus, how our officials are telling the people what to do. And I have been writing to public schools a lot, I write a lot about 9/11, and I hadn't been to a public school since March. And when I went this week and saw only two people there and the empty buildings and the same thing, the postal office, and transportation workers and libraries. Well, about 2 years ago, I was involved with Clinton impeachment, and that was about one of the issues was trying to stop monopolies and Bill Gates, his monopoly at that time during Clinton impeachment proceedings. But Bush's attorneys represented him, and so he was allowed to go. And about 2 years ago, I was told, we're going to lose our libraries because, the computers and the same thing for the postal office. So Bill Gates, involved in Big Pharma, is very connected to all of this. And I appreciated your telling me about World Economic Forum. And my question is how do we get this out to the people? When I tell people, like a lot of people are still afraid to leave their houses. Like I have a voice, but like it's the same thing with 9/11 to tell people about 9/11. Like my voice alone is not strong enough. I need a whole bunch of other people with me. So this is a small phone thing, but we really need more people sharing what you said. And my question is, how are we going to do this? Anyhow, thank you so much for all the shares. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for the listening. And I would say one way, I don't know how well this will work, and I don't know if anybody's even tried it yet, but I know a lot of places are recruiting these contact tracers. And I said this on somebody else's show on the Spiro Skouras fetish show on Activist Post, his site. But I was suggesting that people, especially people who've been laid off or lost their jobs because of the idiotic, suicidal, self-handicapping, gunshot wound to the foot that constitutes the government response to the coronavirus, that people should take a job as a contact tracer, and instead of, trying to get people to snitch on their friends or snitch on their relatives, wake them up to what is the actual reality of this pandemic. I don't know how long that will work, how long that will last, or if that will last, but it's like you've got nothing to lose. I mean, would you really want to be snitching on your neighbors? I don't know. I sat through the certification course it takes to become a contact tracer, It's like 5-6 hours max. You can do it in night if you stay up a little late, even if you are still employed. And I would say that that's an ideal way to wake people up. If you find yourself with a lot of time on your hands and nothing else to do, that's one option. I mean, using their platforms to attack them is probably not the best. Facebook, Google, YouTube, that sort of thing. I don't see a lot of future in that because they're really cracking down on any sort of dissent and making it very difficult to, like, say anything that doesn't agree with whatever the World Health Organization happens to say today as opposed to yesterday, and et cetera, et cetera. But real life is good. Like I said, somebody said earlier, talk to ex-cops if you know any. Flyer the current cops. If you're at a protest, stick a flyer in the cop's pocket, and hopefully he doesn't beat the shit out of you because he happens to be a cop who's current. And I'm seeing, to digress a little bit, I'm seeing what I would say cartoonish levels of violence against unarmed and clearly innocent people. I think the idea is to get everybody behind this. Defund the police, abolish the police, get rid of the police, and then they come up with something much worse, which is this snitch corps, this idea of, like, citizen snitch, let's have the people police themselves, and that way they don't have to pay you, or they pay you very little, and you still are snitching on each other, and there's no trust in the neighborhood, and it's just a very bad situation. Now, I could be wrong about that. They might just bring in Blackwater or some other private security firm, but I think the idea of citizen snitch is definitely on the horizon, and I've written about it, and you can go to my website, helenofdestroy.com, and read my most recent article about that. But, real life is basically our only chance to reach people. The Internet has limited utility. There are so many group thinkers, so many gatekeepers, so many censors. I mean, you can create curiosity there, yes, but as far as deeply informing people, have conversations with your average person, even a person you're just meeting for the first time. I mean, I've noticed before the pandemic, I guess. During the pandemic, I haven't really had a chance to talk to strangers. But before the pandemic, I was having some great conversations with people that I was just meeting about how, like, we had to get rid of this very powerful, outsized role that Israeli intelligence had in our government. And what were these people doing running things when they were one of the most hostile foreign actors to, I mean, everybody complains about, oh, Russians skewed the 2016 elections, but it wasn't Russians, it was Israelis, if anybody. And the fact that we had a terrible candidate running against another terrible candidate, but I digress. Personal interactions should not be ignored, because that's your best chance to really get them one-on-one. That's what cult deprogrammers always say, is that you have to get the cult member one-on-one, and they're not with their cult fellows, because it's your only chance to deprogram them. It's very, very important.
Okay, thanks, Vern. Yep. Next, we have two more questions for you, Helen. Okay. And here's Nita Renfrew. Nita, go ahead.
Oh, hi, Helen. I'm Nita Renfrew. I live in New York, too. I woke up this morning, and it was the first day that I had awakened, and I didn't feel depressed. And I went to my computer, and I had an email from the school that I went to. I'm a massage therapist, and I went to the Swedish Institute. And I had an email from the Swedish Institute saying that they recommend that all of us become contact tracers. And, you know, and the Pacifica, which is, I mean, they train, you know, so it's enlisted all, you know, nurses, aides, nurses, acupuncturists, we're all supposed to become contact tracers now, and they made it official by saying that we can actually get half of a continuing education credit. And
oh my God.
When they make it official like that, immediately, yeah, I used to be a journalist myself, and immediately my antenna went up, and I said, oh my God, what they're going to do is they're going to, you know, what they're going to do is they're going to say that this is what do they call it? Necessary work, and they're going to cut off your unemployment if you don't take a contact tracing job. So that's the way they're going to handle thousands and thousands of people. And I thought, what a way to come in the back door. I mean, because the truth of the matter is that there's no future for massage therapists anymore, because with social distancing, I mean, you can't touch people. And how many people with all of the psychology that's been out there are going to want to come and be touched by somebody? And the other thing they're saying is that we have to wear, you know, if you're a massage therapist and you work in a spa or a gym or something, you have to wear a mask. And on top of that, you also have to wear one of those plastic helmets that weigh several pounds that come down. I mean, you know, it's like, it's the end. So what they're doing, I think what they're doing is they're gonna make contact tracing an essential job. And they're going to just, you know, herd all of these people that are unemployed for whatever, you know, carpenters and acupuncturists and everything else into that thing. And I was depressed the rest of the day. Now the other thing is that I spend all my afternoons in Central Park with my bird friends and my squirrel friends and my raccoon friends. So I talk to a lot of people about, you know, trying to wake them up about this, a lot of strangers. And it's pretty futile. I mean, it's like people have made up their minds and they're not going to change their minds. You know, it's like, I don't think I've changed anybody's mind in the past few months, even though I talk to people every day. And, you know, they might sort of say they changed their minds, but then the next time you see them, they still have their mask on outside in the park when there's nobody around, you know? And I don't know. I think, you know, like Scott, Catherine Austin Fitz talks a lot about the entrainment programs, and I think there's a lot of entrainment going on all over the place. Why would there not be? But this thing about the contact tracing becoming an essential job, I think, is something that we have to think about right now. Because you may, and you know, if you take the job and then you start educating people, you're going to end up in jail. I mean, somebody's going to report you. And they're not going to take lightly to that. I mean, you're going to be reprimanded. I mean, maybe not in the first few weeks, but, you know, as soon as they get organized, it's like you're not going to be able to get away with that. And you're not going to change any minds. You're just going to be reported.
Well, yeah, maybe that's the case. I mean, I definitely know where you're coming from as far as, like, people, they sound like they're listening, and then they completely go back to their pod peopleization. But
yeah,
sure, the thing that you're talking about, the massage therapists are especially being recruited for this, because I'm seeing all these articles about how, oh, yes, well, this is the growth industry of the future. And
yeah, exactly.
They're paying them $65,000 a year. That's a pretty good wage. That's more than I make. That's more than a lot of people make. And I have, like, a job that's actually useful to the world. But, like, $65,000 to snitch on your neighbor and to tell your neighbor to snitch on their neighbors and to be a professional snitch. And so this
But acupuncturists, too. It's going to be acupuncturists and nurses' aides and all kinds of people.
Yeah, they're selling it to everybody as the wave of the future. And that's, I mean, I guess, yeah, because there's no way to call people without your call being recorded. I really did have this idea that we could monkey wrench the contact tracing by infiltrating it and warning people, but I guess maybe that's not possible.
Well, you would also be reported by one of them.
Yeah, I guess that's the, but
I mean, they're going to be snitches too.
Yeah, that's true. But there's also the fact that maybe they don't want to be confined to their homes. I mean, maybe you could be very judicious with who you pulled the truth on, for one thing.
No, I don't think so. Not on the phone. I mean, meaning, not judging by the people I talk to out in the park. No, I mean, people look like they're listening and they're not. You know.
Mm.
No, you can't. Yeah. You can't get away with that. Meaning, you might do it with one person, but you're going to run into a stone wall somewhere along the line. So the contact tracing is really a big threat in the future. If it, you know.
No, it's very bad. I mean, the one thing they don't get, though, is that a lot of people don't answer the phone when they don't recognize the number. So, I mean, they've already admitted that the New York...
Well, yeah, but then they send you... I mean, it's like the census. They send somebody to your house to knock on your door.
Yeah, and so what, you answer the door when some random person knocks on it? Like,
well, if you don't answer the phone and you don't answer your door and you're not in your house, I mean, there's, you know, they're going to trace you through the phone. I mean, you know, it's like... I mean, you can't get away with it indefinitely once they get organized. I mean, in China, how many people can get away with something like that?
Well, that's the thing. Is that do they actually trace you through the phone? Do you know that for a fact?
Of course they do.
I'm talking about in the U.S. and with contact tracing. Do you know any person who they have traced through the phone? Because
They're just starting the program right now.
Yeah, and the program is largely considered to be a failure. I think what they're going to do is just switch over to the phone-based thing, the contact tracing on the phone, because they initially were like, oh, well, we're going to do human contact tracing instead, because obviously it's a warmer, fuzzier thing if there's a human being involved. But since nobody's going to answer the phone when some random person calls them, it's just going to be all Google and Apple, and the people who didn't realize that they were automatically downloading these updates are now screwed. And so, I mean, if you haven't already set your phone, although I think it's already too late, if you didn't set it to not automatically download the updates, you have the updates now, and you have to...
Well, I don't use a cell phone. I just use a landline, so, you know.
Yeah, most people use cell phones, though, and I'm just saying if you want to... If you want to be able to use...
No, but I'm not asking for advice for my own personal self. I'm saying, you know, I think this is a big societal problem that's happening. It's not about, you know, me personally.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is as far as, like, deprogramming people from this group thing, because it surprised me. I didn't think people would be that willing to just completely, like, drop their knees and start licking the boot. I mean, I've seen so many, like, even sort of left-wing, anti-imperialist, commentators who I actually respected, some of them, like, have completely dropped their knees and started furiously licking boots. I mean, I liked George Galloway. I thought he had some interesting things to say. He's a total pod person now.
Really?
He's all about the we need to just social distance and lockdown, and this is the OMF. I call it OMFG virus.
Well, look at Paul Craig Roberts.
Oh, is he gone pod person too? I haven't.
Yeah, he's like, the lockdown is necessary. This is dangerous. Okay. You know, it's like it's coming back and everything.
Yeah. Exactly. So this is the problem. I mean, you've got serious people. I mean, like, he's another one that I respected in the past.
Yeah.
I guess I can't respect him anymore because he's gone pod person, and this is a very serious problem. I don't know how to unprogram people. I know that you have to get them alone and talk to them, but you have to get them alone in person. And maybe hold them by the shoulders and shake them and look into their eyes and just say, dude, you know, that virus that you're scared of, the police state is a lot scarier. I mean, it's maybe just make it a hierarchy of fear. Say you need to fear this more than you need to fear that. If they're already in a fear-like cycle, just to make it clear that there's things scarier than a damn virus. I honestly don't know, because I'm not... Really, I don't know what makes people tick. I wanted to study neuroscience to find that out, but my attempts were foiled back in the day, so I went into journalism instead, and I still don't know what makes people do what they do, because they really do the most suicidal, stupid things, and I don't get it.
Well, I think there's a lot of entrainment, and there's probably a lot of people that are compromised, you know. You know, and especially in the public level, you know.
Oh, of course.
So there's a lot of, you know, it's like, I mean, it's like they've been compromising people for decades, and they've been, you know, and this entrainment stuff is going on all over the place. I'm sure it's going on in Central Park, outdoors.
I'm not really familiar with this word, entrainment. Sorry, I don't know. I'll look it up.
Well, you got it. Do you hear Catherine Austin Fitz? She talks a lot about it.
I know. I'm familiar with her. I haven't listened to, I guess, enough of her stuff.
Yeah,
I'll look
it up. She talks about the entrainment programs that they have, you know, like when you go to these meetings on the economy or finances and so on, and then you can actually feel, you know, they're beaming in stuff that's, you know, affecting your brain and so on.
All right.
And, I mean, it's easy to do on the computer and on television, you know.
Yeah, they have so many ways.
It's subliminal messages, that's what it is.
They have a lot of ways to get to you these days. And a lot of it is just right in front of your face. They don't even need to be subtle about it anymore. People are so, they're open books. They voluntarily put their whole life out there for everybody to steal.
Okay, Anita, are you all set?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Helen, we have three more questions. People keep signing, getting in the queue. So are you holding up okay with this?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So the next one is from, you're coming up as anonymous. So if you have not,
This is Sherry.
That's you, Sherry.
This is Sherry. What happened during our call, just to report to you, is that Skype dropped the call, and when I went to call back in the exact same way I did, it said Skype will not allow this call. So I did call in all the alternative one, and now I'm on. So anyway, I had an idea about what you were talking about what can we do, because we all need to do something, it seems like, is what this contact tracing is kind of similar to what the Stasi did, you know, about having snitch on each other and stuff. And that word communism is all so hated in our country. Why don't we start a media campaign on their own weaponry, like their own Facebook stuff, and say, and start equating that, kind of do weaponize contact tracing, where, boy, you're going to do that, you're going to be one of the Stasis, you know, you're going to be a communist and spy on us, and make it like an ugly, horrible thing to do, because it is, you know. And we could maybe kind of start equating that. We can make memes that'll go viral and stuff. Just us people can do, get started, because it is true, you know. So that was just an idea that I wanted to throw out there to everybody. Thank you.
Yeah, no, if you have the ability to make that go viral, I've been trying to make the hashtag CitizenStasi go viral on Twitter for a couple of
years. Oh, okay. Well, we're on the same wavelength. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
It's very much the Stasi situation, and I have seen this as CitizenStasi, like, and there are even apps, like the apps that have been around since before Corona, things like Nextdoor, Neighbors, Citizen is another one, literally CitizenStasi. I've been trying to make this hashtag go viral, not having a whole lot of luck because I'm heavily suppressed on Twitter. But if you guys have more of a reach than I do, I would say use those hashtags. CitizenStasi would be my obvious one, but if you have a better idea, then please use that. Make it go viral.
Well, I haven't seen anybody talking about, I'm on Facebook a lot with 9/11, and I haven't seen anybody do much talking about this at all, this contact tracing. So maybe we can kind of get it started. Those people on the call who are on Facebook, post something, you know?
Please so, do. I mean, I don't use Facebook anymore because I just, it's pointless. If you're making a post and you have thousands of friends and it goes out to five people, it's kind of pointless, so I gave up on Facebook. But, if you have reach on Facebook, do it, please. We need everybody to revile this situation, this idea of
catching
a year, this idea of, I mean, I wrote a whole long article that, again, nobody has seen because I have no reach whatsoever, but it's a long article about how this rapper that they're trying to claim is the number one music artist in hip-hop who is widely loved by a lot of children because all of his stuff is with bright colors and shiny things and lots of money. But his whole thing is that he snitched on a couple dozen of his friends that made him famous, these gang members, even members of gangs that he didn't belong to. And he comes out of jail. Normally, rappers will not have anything to do with a snitch. This guy is number 3 on Billboard Hot 100 chart. So that's to make kids embrace the idea of snitching. And a lot of people think, oh, well, we don't care about rap. We're political analysts. We don't care about this stuff. Well, you should, because your kids are paying attention to it, and your kids are going to rat you out in the end. So ignore him at your peril, and pay attention to that. So go to my website. That's the first article on it, I think. But it's definitely, they're trying to sell this idea of snitching, and they're also trying to racialize it. This whole Karen thing, the idea of the Karen, the white woman with an asymmetrical haircut who wants to see the manager. So it's not okay to snitch if you're a Karen, but of course, Karen is in the eye of the beholder. So all of these people who are now there's a lot of these reports coming out now that these people accused of being Karens and losing their jobs and being attacked on social media are not actually, you know, doing the racial offenses that they're actually being accused of doing. So this is what I produced in that article. But we're miniaturizing the idea of wrong snitching to just be the province of these Karens, and then everybody else is allowed to snitch. Everybody allows. They've reframed it as calling out. So if you can find a tweet in somebody's past 12 years ago where they used a racial slur, that's calling out. That's not snitching. If you can produce an incident where there was some debatable interaction and you report that and you're of a less privileged class than they are, you can call that as a racial incident, even if it wasn't, and say, oh, yeah, well, look what they did, and then they lose their livelihood, and then you're not a snitch, you're a hero. So they've completely redefined the whole thing, where tattletaling, which used to be a widely reviled practice, is now a heroic act as long as you're the right kind of person. And it's very disturbing, because snitching is not a good thing, no matter who you are. The enemy is the ruling class. The enemy is not the guy one rung above you on the ladder.
Right. And again, the mafia used to shoot snitches. Where are they when we need them?
Seriously. Where are the mafia when we need them?
I know. I grew up in a family where snitching was so bad. If I came and told my dad my brother did something, I got in trouble for snitching. So I grew up in an anti-snitching family, like to the death almost, you know. So it's real important to me.
No, parents need to do that. And yeah, kids used to get their ass whooped if they came home and said, oh, well, so-and-so beat me up. Well, why didn't you beat them up back? Or why didn't you, like, at least try to fight back? This whole idea of, like, lionizing snitching, we've become this, like, culture of the victim where, oh, well, you got your ass kicked either, like, metaphorically or physically, and now that's, like, a victory is, like, being the victim. What is this? What have we done to ourselves as a species, as a, like, Western society in general? Now it's, like, supposedly a point of virtue where, oh, well, I was victimized, therefore I am to be looked up to. Well, no, actually, you don't want to be a victim. You want to be not the one who victimizes others either. Obviously, that's not a good thing, but you want to fight back. You want to hold your own. You want to not be a victim.
All right. Thank you, Sherry, for that.
Thank you.
Okay, Ann Hendricks, you're up. Go ahead.
Hi, Helen again. This is Ann again. Yes, you said that you have a job that is actually useful to the world. Thank you again. You absolutely do. We appreciate you. Just a couple of points here. Another natural ally I think that we might have would be people who lost elections. Whoever is part of the, you know, the whole drive now and this propaganda right now, maybe we could reach out to the people who lost those positions, like if it's your local mayor or, you know, certain commissioners, county commissioners, find out, you know, who they lost to. And those individuals just might have open ears because they're going to be more critical of what's going on in those positions with the incumbents. Just an idea. Another thing is, I think that photographs of things really help, like, say, 9/11 photographs or photographs. I do a lot of screenshots from videos, like on the Corbett reports, somebody had put a footage from the nurses dancing in the hospitals. I'm sure y'all have seen some of that. But just, you know, pointed things that really tell a story that can grab attention far more than your words. Tomorrow, I'm picking up some photos from a print shop and I'm going to talk to the person who actually told me the day of 9/11. And I just realized, wow, you know, this person is a natural you know, a person that I can reach out to, because she is the one that told me that about the towers, you know, come and watch, you know, the TV, who called me, who informed me. And it was like, obviously, 19 years ago. And I just realized, wow, I'm going to reach out to her. And she is a community, big community involved in our county. So anyway, also, so one of my questions is, why don't you trust Joe Imbriano? You know, I've just been watching some of his stuff in recent months, so, and I'd just like to get your opinion on that.
Some of his stuff is just way out there, and he doesn't seem to have any proof to back it up. He says things that are deliberately wild that will deliberately cause people to dismiss him as crazy and dismiss everything else he says as crazy. I mean, he says there's no such thing as a virus, for one thing, which I'm sorry, I have no reason.
Oh, okay. Yep. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
I've noticed that he calls a lot of people controlled ops. Deb Tavares anyway, so thank you. Just was wondering about that. Yeah. Another person out there in Orange County is Peggy Hall. How are you familiar with her? She's pretty active now. She's got a website called The Healthy American, but she's actually really become an activist. And she's telling us, you know, like, show me the law. If you want to go into a place where they're requiring face coverings, just show me the law. Or show me the statute, and you can't require that of me, that kind of thing. So she's, you know, she's urging people to find out what is the written policy in your county or by your governor. So I do recommend, if anybody wants to get some ideas from her, she's a pretty dynamic activist there.
Okay.
Yeah,
thanks.
I think that in some states they actually have, like, put this stuff in the law. I know Cuomo has made a big proclamation about the masks and even said the other weekend that, oh, don't make me come down there, because there were these videos circulating on social media where there was people not wearing masks and drinking outside in the summertime. Oh, how dare they enjoy their humanity. But, I think a lot of other places are putting these proclamations out without actually backing them up in law, so that's a good idea, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. And then we have Kat again. Kat, go ahead.
Okay, this one is kind of more low-level stuff about elections, and I have, I'd like your take on two kind of different suggestions I have for VP. It sounds like no matter what, we're going to have for the Democrats a black woman, it seems. What do you think of Kamala Harris probably being the one? Do you think she is, and what do you think of her? And then I had another bit of idea. If we're looking for black women, got to have that, check all the ticks there. What do you think the possibility is of Trump getting rid of asshole Pence and going along with Cynthia McKinney? She has done her share of partnering with the right and still maintaining her own integrity. So Kamala Harris goes up against Cynthia McKinney. What do you think?
If Trump would get rid of Pence and put in Cynthia McKinney, that would be amazing, and I think a lot of people would go for that. However, I do not see it happening, because Trump is so, has set up shop, like, three-quarters of the way up Bibi Netanyahu's colon, and I don't think that he's crawling out of there anytime soon. However, she would make a brilliant VP, especially if Trump just, like, sat down and let her do all of the, foreign policy stuff. Yeah, Kamala Harris is horrible. I mean, she was exposed by Tulsi Gabbard in one of the early debates and lost her complete momentum there. The only way she would ever get any power is if she insinuated herself into Biden's thing, and Biden, of course, had his mental decline continue, which is clearly already very far advanced, because they won't even trot him out unless they're basically forced to. He's just so far gone. So I mean, it's very bad because I don't. Unfortunately, Trump has completely ruined his chances of getting reelected by just not following through on any of his promises. I mean, you could have pulled troops out of Afghanistan or Iraq or Syria, and instead you've just left them there and made a lot of noise. And making a lot of noise doesn't convince people. The people who, the families of those troops that are still overseas, know that their family is not home. So you can't bullshit your way out of that one. And it's too bad because I think that the promises that he made were things that a lot of people wanted. But you can't make those promises, not deliver, and then make them again and expect people to believe you a second time. Although Bernie Sanders did in 2016, promised everybody that he would go through it to the end and then completely capitulated, threw everybody under the bus, told them to vote for Clinton, came back in 2020 and said, hey, vote for me again. That whole thing, it never happened. And people fell for it. I couldn't believe that. I mean, I volunteered for the guy in 2016. I was going around knocking on doors for Bernie Sanders. And but I felt terribly betrayed and wanted my money back, although I never got it. And he somehow still got people to work for him in 2020. I can't figure that one out. But the fact is that people will go to people who have betrayed them before because they have nothing better to do. And what are you supposed to do? Another vote for the lesser of two evils? I think whoever is going to be running third party, if, I mean, I don't know, who is the Green Party running this time? Have they even decided on a candidate? I don't think they have. And neither has the Libertarian Party, as far as I know. Whoever runs a quality third party candidate is going to get unprecedented numbers of votes, that's for sure. We're also going to see a tiny, tiny portion of the electorate actually cast a vote because, I mean, talk about lesser of two evils. Talk about two terrible candidates. They don't get much more terrible than these two. So, I mean, it's the future of American democracy is very dubious, and it's anybody's guess if we'll even have an election in November. So, I don't know.
Okay. All right. Thank Kat. You all done?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. There's no more questions, Helen, from that. But I just had one more for you myself. It seemed like. Before the George Floyd event, that there were people out starting to protest the lockdowns around the country and even around the world. And then that event happened, and I almost think it was orchestrated to take away the lockdown protests and sort of make them irrelevant, because now you don't see any of that. So I almost think they were orchestrated for that purpose, and I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
That's possible. Like I said, they've tried to set it off as the George Floyd protests are the opposite of the lockdown protests, and I don't think that's necessarily the case at all. I think that, while they have tried to frame it as, oh, the anti-lockdown protests are all these white rednecks who hate black people or something, which is totally not true, and the George Floyd protests are all these, like, mostly people of color, which is totally not true, so they've tried to frame it as one is the opposite of the other, not the case. I think that if the two groups talked to each other and they couldn't see what each other looked like, they would find they had a lot in common. However, that will never happen because they've both been so heavily programmed by the media that, I mean, just nonstop, places like The Guardian and New York Times even was just trying to frame these anti-lockdown protesters as being these white supremacists or, oh, yeah, they tried to pretend that they were normal citizens. You just wanted the businesses to reopen. Or other than that, it was, oh, well, these are just shallow, rich douchebags who wanted a haircut or something. And it's like, no, actually, they wanted to be able to feed their families. It's a pretty normal motivation that maybe New York Times has never experienced. But, yeah, I can see that they might have done that to preempt further lockdown demonstrations because they were definitely spooked, I think, by the one that the armed protesters got into the state capitol in, I think it was Michigan. Michigan. Yeah, I think they were spooked by that one. And they were having a hard time demonizing these people because a lot of people, while they would not be comfortable with saying it because they know that their friends and family would condemn them as, killing grandma, but a lot of people sympathized with them, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and I also wanted to just respond to a few of the other people who made comments that live in New York, And I'm in Connecticut, and I live kind of rural, so we don't have hardly any cases in my area, though we have them in the state. But and as I go around meeting people, a lot of people are telling me they think this is a hoax or fake, or you know that the numbers are being falsely moved upward and stuff. So I see more people out here getting it. And it kind of surprises me. So I just wanted to share that if it gives anybody any hope in New York. I can see where they might not do that because you're exposed to a lot of people having it, probably, having the illness. Helen, thank you so much for joining us. And I think that was a great conversation, and I appreciate your providing that information. And hopefully you'll join us again sometime. And you're welcome to stay on the call right now. We're going to be discussing whatever anyone else wants to discuss at this point. And if you want to join us, that'd be great.
Yeah, can I just say one thing about cases in New York and stuff?
Sure.
I went around to a couple of hospitals and peeked in my head. There was one place in Coney Island that was supposedly a COVID ward. And I looked in there. It had been filmed on the news, was being bustling with people. And when I came down there on my bike and looked inside, it was almost deserted. I mean, now, obviously, if people are in a COVID ward and they're all on ventilators, which I don't know if that's what people typically are in a COVID ward. I've never been in one. But it was very, very quiet. There was no noise. I saw maybe two people walking around with clipboards, not doing a whole lot. And yet we were told that New York was completely overwhelmed and that, I mean, obviously Cuomo saying that they had to send COVID patients to nursing homes, which was literally homicidal. So this idea that New York was overwhelmed with coronavirus cases, I mean, there are so many jokes going around about how, oh, this guy died in a car crash, better put him up as COVID death, and that was real. It was, like, literally first responders making those jokes, like, because it actually happened. So, I mean, I don't get why New Yorkers aren't questioning that, because I don't know anybody in New York who got sick, actually. I know people out in New York who got sick, but in New York, I don't personally know anybody, and I know a lot of New Yorkers. I've lived here 15 years, but nobody who got sick, so I don't know. I think people got scared and they got stupid, and unfortunately it's difficult to separate the one from the other.
Right, yeah, so I've wondered about that too, and I know Kat shared she went to a hospital in New York and there was nobody there also, so yeah, I think we've been lied to a lot about all of that. So all right, so we're going to open it up now. I'm going to take it out of Q&A for a moment here. Unless you have yourself self-muted, then you're welcome to speak now with no problem. And if you want to mute yourself, it's star 6. So would anyone like to bring up a topic that they'd like to discuss? Just about...
Sherry popped back when I got kicked off.
Oh, okay. So in the phase of the program now where we're going to be having sort of an open conversation about any issues that it could be more about the same issue we've been talking about or something different, maybe how we should respond to what's happening to us. Anything. Anyone have a topic they want to bring up? And
Cheryl, this is Ann.
Yeah, Ann.
Okay, two things. First of all, I thought I was going to be moving, and so I didn't think I'd have internet, so I resigned. But I'm happy to do minutes until I don't have internet. I can do that if you want.
We love you. Thank you. Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, I'll do that. So another question, speaking of these hospitals in New York without, many people, does anyone happen to know which hospital that footage was from where the nurses were dancing in the hallway in a mocking way?
I thought that was in North Carolina or something.
Oh, yeah. They were wearing more green stuff, and they had pillows in there. Yeah.
But I think I've seen a couple of different places where the nurses were dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the whole dancing nurses thing started in the UK. I don't know when it moved here, but it started in the UK.
Yeah, that's just one of the screenshots that I have that I, yeah. But anyway.
Okay. Anyone else have comments or thoughts? Or?
Well, I just want to say about the hospitals being full or not, I don't know what the situation is in New York. I have a friend who has three cousins who are nurses, and he says they've been so busy the past 3 months that he can't even get them on the phone, and that they just come home and they collapse because they're working, you know, 18 hours a day and so on. But on the other hand, I sit out in the park, and I've met a number of nurses who came here as volunteers from other parts of the country, and they said they haven't found any place for them to work, and they're just hanging around New York for a couple of weeks and walking around the park and so on. So I don't know. You know, it may be that they've just decided to overwork certain places so that those people think everything is being overworked, and that other hospitals are just empty. They may have done it on purpose. The other thing that I wondered about was when a few weeks ago they had a lot of coverage of what they said was coffins being buried in Potter's Grave on Hart Island. I think there were like 800 of them. And I can't believe that there were 800 dead people that nobody claimed the bodies of, you know, and we don't know what was in those coffins. And then that story just sort of disappeared. So, you know, and then there were those trucks that they said had rotting bodies in them. And one of the superintendents I know said, well, we don't know what was in those trucks, you know. Meaning nobody saw the bodies.
Yeah, okay. Two things. This is Anne. Let's see. In regard to the coffins, I did take some screenshots of that, and there's an empty coffin, actually, sitting on top of the others. From the aerial view, you'll see there were no trucks, no uh-huh. vehicles whatsoever. Somebody who is doing a kind of an analysis of that mentioned, let's see. Well, forgot that part, but anyway, it was very good. Just so, that's one of the things that I want to show people are these screenshots of, like, that was some, you know, kind of looks pretty fakey.
Yeah, yeah.
You have an empty coffin sitting on top of the others. And
then
well,
it disappeared
okay.
from the news. I mean, you know, like. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can't remember what was on a morning show, ABC or something like that. Anyway, so, and the other thing is, did anybody see the whistleblower, Erin? She has kind of a Polish
her,
last
yeah.
name. Okay.
Yeah.
Journeyman Pictures did a documentary with her. That excellent.
That was good. This is Kat. I saw her. Very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's done some follow-ups with, Del Big Tree, I think, last week. So, yeah. Powerful testimony there, yeah.
This is Pat. My sister in Boston had a friend who said, it's not Mount Sinai, I can't remember what the big hospitals are up there in Boston, common name, but in any event, she said that her friend was just not doing anything at all. So if people are okay with it, we can keep talking about this, but if anybody wants to switch subjects, I would be interested in talking about, is Floyd a fake? Is that a psyop, that it didn't necessarily happen the way they showed it? But I don't want to change subjects if people are still talking about the COVID deaths and the hospital.
Well, I think it's part of connecting the dots. I think it was probably a fake, too, in order to get the attention away from the protests against the lockdown that were starting.
My experience is that the nurses aren't getting a lot of pay. I see some of them having lunch sitting on door stoops in my neighborhood, and I said there's no place to eat, and they just aren't getting everybody at 7 o'clock applauds them, but they're not getting pay or anything like the first responders. I saw an advertisement on a bank of let's endorse the first responders. Well, 3,000 of them died not wearing any masks or anything, and the same for the nurses. They're not getting a proper pay or their needs met, and that's how they're living, by us giving them endorsements. investment, but it's just part of the whole thing, the whole economic crisis. People who are needed aren't getting the pay. So that's my part of the, in that. So.
Well, we don't know whether it's true that all those people died either. So.
This is Sherry. I have a friend. She's one of us 9/11 truth advocates, Lisa Frith, and she works as a nurse at Jacoby City Hospital in New York. She said that she's getting extra pay for working. So maybe some people are and some people aren't, but she's pretty happy with it because she's getting pretty good extra pay to work in this COVID situation. And another thing I wanted to report is I went up to my hospital about a month into this COVID thing, after I've been all quarantining, and someone sent me, it might have been David Meismichel, somebody sent me a compilation of people with cell phones going to their local hospitals and seeing what's going on. And it was empty. The hospitals were empty, but pop-up tents were set up outside with medical screening equipment in them, but not being used. So I went, what the heck? So I got dressed about 6:37 in the morning. I went up to Tri-City Medical Center here in North San Diego, big medical center, and I drove up and I found the same thing. I found it empty. I found the parking lot empty. And medical person walking in and out, not one had masks. And so I got out of my car and I have my bandana on and my gloves and everything. And I went over to the nurse, to the emergency room, and the door opened automatically, and a nurse came over, and she did have a mask on, and I said, is this where I would get tested for the COVID virus? And she said, why are you sick? And I said, no, I have a friend who may have a few symptoms, and is this where I would take her? And she said, well, maybe. We can't guarantee she could get the test. I said, okay, thank you very much, and I walked outside with security guard there. There's a big yellow tent set up, big pop-up, medical screens in it, and two green pop-ups like registration things, but not being used. And I asked the guard, I said, is that those pop-ups for coronavirus or care or testing? And he said, no. And I said, well, can you please tell me what they're for? He said, none of your business. And I started to video him, and he got mad at me about that. So I got in my car, and I took off. I got a little nervous, and I got a little bit lost at the parking lot. I went up to some upper parking lot, which did not have an exit. And I rolled down my window to talk to the landscape guy to see how to get out of here. And I look in my rearview mirror, and that security guard was in his electric car on my bumper, and he chased me all the way out of the parking lot and down the street to the main road. So it was really unusual, you know. So our hospitals out here are not very busy at all.
Thank you for sharing.
So, I don't know, probably anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Something fishy's going on, though. And if anybody has 5G towers by them right now that they're experiencing, that you know you have 5G by, you're experiencing anything different, and has one by her.
No, just, it's probably not 5G, but, yeah.
I want to
Australia.
I'd like to hear a more analysis on George Floyd, if anybody thoughts on that.
I'd like to share one little thought. I have tons of thoughts, but just one little one that I haven't really heard anybody say, and that is, I'd really like to know from anyone in Minneapolis if all of the Minneapolis police have their license plates or vanity plates that says police. This run-of-the-mill police car just happened to have a plate, the license number, police. So, like, while you're watching it, in case you didn't get the message, police, police, police. Isn't that a strange license plate?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, the thing is that the autopsy report apparently said that he died of that he had three times a lethal dose of fentanyl in him, and that he died of a heart attack, and that there were no contusions on his neck. So,
Yeah, and you probably all heard that he was a security guard at the same place as the policeman who killed
yeah,
him.
The Rodeo but,
yeah.
Yeah. Club. Yeah.
Of course, they said they never met each other, but, you know, who knows if that's true.
Well, they were both there for 17 years at the same time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, it couldn't have been because he, George Floyd was in Houston for, no, they were, the cop was for 17 years, and they knew each other.
The cop was 17 years, yeah.
Yeah. But also, when you look at the mugshot of the cop, and when you see him in the video, that mugshot is somebody who not only looks like 10 years younger, but looks like a totally different person and has a different forehead hip line.
Well, they could very easily have paid both of them and said, look, we'll give you $1 million and you'll go into a witness protection program and you know, don't say anything. And, you know, a lot of people would accept.
But they've put him on, they've put the police on trial. There's going to be a trial. And George Floyd's family have been at all sorts of events. Like, I think the George Floyd killing was real. They didn't have to fake it because there's black people being killed every day by the police. I think I've seen at least two videos by black men explaining that the George Floyd killing was fake, and I think they're putting out disinfo to try to make people think that it was fake so that they can keep the anti-lockdown protesters, the white protesters, from joining with the black protesters, because they want to create this illusion that all the black protests are fake, you know? And when they're not fake, like, the black liberation is a real struggle. Like, so if the black and white people got together, that, you know, that would quash the deep state. So they're trying to create this illusion that it's all fake, that the black
people. The police treat white people that way too. I mean, they treat everybody like that.
Well, I would like to respond from that. I really believe that the people who are orchestrating this are not at all wanting black and white people to get together. There's two groups
of
white
people. That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Well, I think we have to be really clear that the two groups of white people and Black Lives Matter are being highly used. This is just one post on a signpost on a path that is basically this is a 10-year agenda. It's called Agenda 21 to Agenda 30. They're doing, as Helen said, the Great Reset, and this is just the opening salvo, Corona, and then boom, a 1-2 punch, opening salvo. They have a lot of stuff in store for them. But what I would like to say about the white people involved, there are the protesters who are the lockdown protesters who they've completely made synonymous with white supremacists, which I'm writing a big paper to show that is like totally trumped up and false. But then you've got two different white groups with the Black Lives Matter group. And the one white group is what I would just basically call really genuine white people who really do care, and they're totally gullible, and they're being played big time on their white guilt. And some of it is actually kind of a brainwashing, because in the universities they have all of this Frankfurt School politics. So they're getting brainwashed about that, and they've also been very dumbed down in our universities. So you've got those white people, and then the Antifa go back decades. They're basically Gladio. They're Gladio saboteurs and agent provocateurs, and all of those white people, Antifa saboteurs, they're trying to blame all of that stuff on the white lockdown protester types. So it's really ugly, and we all want black freedom. We all want black liberation, but everybody is being super played by this. And I would just like to say one more thing before I get off my little soapbox, thank you for listening. But the one more thing is I've been an anti-racist activist since the early 80s. There's a new video out, a series on Netflix, and lo and behold, there's a 45-second clip, and I'm in it as leading an anti-racist march. So I've been involved a lot, but I'm very clear that these statistics are framed, exaggerated. The level of violence by police against blacks, if you see it over and over and over 800 million times, then you're going to think 800 million deaths have actually happened. I highly recommend people watch the Trayvon Martin hoax, because Black Lives Matter grew out of that. It's called the Trayvon Martin hoax. It's not perfect, but just watch and
spell the what again? Hey, you could spell the what? The Trayvon?
Do you know who Trayvon Martin is?
No.
He's like one of the martyrs.
No.
He's one of the main black martyrs when they say Eric Garner. Trayvon Martin. Obama said he could be my son. So he's Trayvon Martin is like one of the first main martyrs that they have. And watch the documentary, The Trayvon Martin Hoax. And that's just one eye view into, I look deeply into the Aubrey one. There's a lot of stuff that just doesn't add up. A lot of these people who are being the hagiography now to mythologize them, they're thugs. George Floyd was a serial criminal who was a druggie. And was a porn star. Now, not that his death wasn't bad, but you don't put him at the level of Martin Luther King. And that's what's happening, because there's a narrative, and if you would all go against the narrative. So I just want to say, I never thought I would say it as a lifelong, long-term anti-racist activist. These statistics about evil white cops, I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it's not like they're projecting it at all. So that's what I would say.
Well, I remember with Occupy Wall Street, the way the cops were like that with all of the white people. I mean, you know, they weren't any different. I mean, they were terrible to the Occupy people.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of brutalization by cops.
I mean, it's not just against blacks. There's a lot of brutalization.
And we have to remember that we have been sending our police forces across the nation over to the Israeli Mossad for training for a very long time. And so, you know, they're learning how to genocide their own people. I had my cousin get blown apart by a Magnum when he was a young man, and he was not armed by a cop. So I don't know. I don't like him very much.
Well, I don't either. I'm opposed to state, but I also think we should put it in context, because right now they're saying get rid of the police, and that is extremely dangerous. In the Bolshevik Revolution, one of the main things they did was get rid of the police, so there was no way for the thugs to come in. You guys, I have to go. It's a great conversation. Thanks so much. I just have to go. All right, bye.
Bye, Kat.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, Kat's gone. This is Ann, but I would just agree with a lot of what she just said, too. I want to recommend a video producer, and I don't know his name, but the channel is MAG, Disturbing Truth. He seems to have maybe a Nigerian accent. He did some analysis of the George Floyd story. I think, personally, in my opinion, it looks quite staged, and if you watch some of the videos, like of Courtney Ross, say on YouTube, George Floyd's girlfriend speaks out about him. I don't know, some of these people look very much like actors, or act poorly, actually. Or the mayor of Minneapolis, I think his name is Jacob Frey, crying at the coffin, or a grade school teacher who allegedly saved George Floyd's third grade paper, and she shows that. So they interviewed her, and anyway, different persons involved with this story they seem to be poor actors, crying on demand, that kind of thing. Anyway, so I'm going to recommend this fellow, MAG, on
Disturbing Truth. He also did an amazing analysis of Emmett Till, the Emmett Till story. So that's all I want to mention.
I wanted to ask David Rold if you could let us know, David, what's happening with the Green Party. Who do they have? I know you were running for president in the Green Party. Did they pick a candidate yet?
The convention is July 11th, and
okay.
it looks like they're picking Howie Hawkins, who isn't too good. But there have been all sorts of irregularities in the primaries and you know, and rigging going on, and there are people trying to get the results overturned, and there are people trying to get Jesse Ventura to be drafted to run, but I don't think that's going to happen. But anyway,
that would be great.
Yeah.
I like him. He'd be good.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen him speaking out, like, for coronavirus truth, but I would support him for president if he would do that.
He owns a place down in Baja, and he's probably down there just hanging out, I think.
Well, at least he has the name recognition that might help also, so, yeah.
Isn't Howie Hawkins a Russia-gator?
What?
Isn't Howie Hawkins a Russia-gator? Like, doesn't he believe that Russia...
Yeah, he believes some stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
I ran because he was supporting the war on Syria, so...
That's another deal-breaker, yes.
Yeah. And he's for testing and contact tracing now.
Okay, so then he's not acceptable. Then why isn't the Green Party up against him? Like, what's wrong with them?
Because most of the Green Party insiders have that kind of politics.
That sucks. Like, I mean, so we have no third party alternative. I was really hoping that
the Libertarians already picked someone. I don't remember who it was, but. Look into that under now. So.
Well, the Libertarians last time picked a pod person. Why would they not pick a pod person this time? Or do you know?
They probably did. I don't know. So.
Yeah, because last time the guy they picked is Gary Johnson, a total pod person. No.
Yeah.
Not acceptable. So that sucks.
That'd be a shame because it's a Howie doesn't sound acceptable either. So, wow.
No.
Okay, yeah. All right, good conversations. Any other topics or anything anyone want to add to this?
Well, did you see that Eric Lawyer and Christopher Joya did a little event together and that the firemen are for 9/11 justice are starting to try to do more. And so if you could tell your local fire departments about them. And a really good video that I've been sharing is Christopher Joya at the Press Club 9/11. That's on YouTube. And it's a 13 minutes of a wonderful, just Christopher Joya talking. And he was all decked out in his fireman suit with his medals. And he's a Marine and a 30-year Union man. I mean, he's Mr. America. And he's really coming out about 9/11 truth. And he's a wonderful person. He came out here. I did an event on March 6th. And he came out with the Lawyers Committee, and he's really trying. So if you can get more firemen in your local area to go on his website, that would be good. So,
yeah, thanks for that, Sherry. I'll check that out, his website.
If you're living in a city where there are a larger than usual number of fireworks and or fireworks that sound like bombs, and you have contacts with firemen, talk to them because they might have a lot of work on their hands come July 4th or at any rate some point in the near future, because I really do think they're going to try to burn down sizable chunks of at least New York City, if not other places. There's a warning up on my YouTube channel, and I'm going to put a more detailed video hopefully within the week because some people have asked me for proof. I think there's enough proof in the initial video, but there will be more. They're going to try to, I mean, at least New York, large numbers of wealthy people have fled the city because of this coronavirus. So now is the good time for them to burn down. The real estate bubble has burst. They're never going to recoup their investment except through insurance. So this is the time. And firemen need to be on the alert. Police need to be on the alert. If you have any contacts within either organization, there have already been some small fires with these fireworks, as you can probably hear, they're going off right now. So any contacts within local government, to contact these people and alert them, because this is the only chance we might have to save our cities. And I'm not joking around here. This is a really serious situation. So.
Yeah, I live in Western Connecticut, where a lot of New Yorkers have, like, summer homes, but now they're flocking here like crazy and buying up all the homes.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's
really
what they're doing.
Out of New York. Yeah.
It's going to burn. It's going to burn.
Whoever is doing the 12 o'clock Saturday outreach on Speaking Out, could you email me at Tishman, T-I-S-H-M-A-N, Byrne, F-E-R-N, at yahoo.com. So I would like to know more about that group. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else?
Helen, thanks for that note about what you have there on your website. We can pass that on to Chris Gioia, and he can get the word out, too.
Yeah, I don't know if there's, like, an email list or something. I can send you the initial video that I made with Harry Vox, and then, like I said, I'm going to make another one hopefully sometime this week with some more, like, proof backing it up, because, I mean, obviously us saying it and saying we have the proof doesn't really help people who need the proof, but we do actually have that, so I'm going to try to put that together either tonight or maybe tomorrow. And I don't know, I'm very, very busy, but hopefully sometime soon.
Is your contact info on your website so we can just...
Yes, it is.
Okay.
What is
about
the website again?
HelenofDestroy.com.
Helen of Destroy, okay.
Helen of Destroy?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Anything else?
Thank you, everyone.
Any thoughts on Jeffrey Berman getting fired? Anybody?
I think that's a battle of the elite. Take on that.
Yeah.
I don't think it will affect our lawsuit in any way. Mm-hmm. They'll just put someone else in there who won't do anything with it also.
I think we should organize a rally on the steps of his office for next 9/11, you know, get the permit, do the whole thing, and everybody go there and do a peaceful rally that we want justice for that, and have explosive investigated. That's what I think we should do.
Sounds like
good
a good idea.
What else have we got to do? The guy's all locked up.
Well, that's a good idea, Sherry. Maybe through email you can generate some more interest.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other thoughts or comments? All right, well, I guess that's we're done for the evening. It was a great conversation. Good to talk to you all about that. And So our next call is on July 29th, and if anyone has any ideas for speakers, please let us know. And Ian, Craig, and I will email you more about the minutes. Thank you again.
Bye.
For volunteering.
Sure,
for that.
You're welcome. Okay, good night. Thanks for all
good
your...
Good night, everyone. Take
Bye.
Care.
Bye. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.